This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. With the Adequan FEI North American Junior and Young Rider Championships presented by Gotham North taking place in the Kentucky Horse Park this week, we'll be hearing from George Williams and Charlotte Bradore Baker, who are both USEF youth coaches. They'll be talking about the youth programs available and their role during the NAJYRC. And later in the program, we have an extract from The Circle, which was taken from the 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Conventions Education Session with Dr. Hilary Clayton. Before that, though, we have one item of news about the Great American Insurance Group USDF Breeders' Championship Program, which is an outlet for breeders to highlight their business horses and for competitors to showcase their young or breeding stock horses. This championship series provides excellent opportunities if you're interested in gaining your young or breeding stock horses' mileage in a show environment without riding a dressage performance test. And you can find more information about this and the competition calendar on the website at usdf.org. I'm joined now by the two USEF youth coaches, George Williams and Charlotte Bradore Baker. First of all, George, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And also Charlotte joining us too. During this week of the Adequan FEI North American Junior and Young Rider Championships presented by Gotham North, which are taking place in the Horse Park, and Charlotte is there now. Charlotte, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Well, youth is what it's all about this week in the Horse Park. So, George, why don't you start by talking a little bit about the programs that you have under the remit of youth there in the USEF and USDF?
To start with, of course, this is our first year in these roles. I'm very happy that there are two of us taking this on because, as you know, it's a very large country and there's a lot to cover. And we have tried to develop a program that's sort of all-encompassing, and it ranges from trying to do some grassroots-type clinics that we've called the outreach clinics, and all the way up to, of course, helping to prepare riders for this competition. And then I had just returned from Germany and taking two of our top young riders to a competition in Hagen called the Future Champions.
Explain a little bit about that, because we did have some guests here on the show recently, George. Talk us through that, to take those riders over to Europe.
Well, it's a wonderful competition. All told, it's jumping and dressage. So all told, there were 27 countries represented and over 800 horses participating, competitors participating in it. For the dressage, we took young riders over. There were 10 teams competing, which is, such a wonderful experience for our riders to go against the Dutch and the Germans, Swedish, pretty much all the European countries had sent teams. So that, just the atmosphere and the opportunity to compete against the best young riders from Europe was, I think, obviously a terrific experience. Catherine Chamberlain was there, and Aiden Uller was our other representative, and they did a super job. I think each one had one day when they really shined in their tests. And they really held their own, I have to say, against the best riders that were there. In addition, they were terrific representatives of the U.S. For both of them, it was their first experience in Europe with horses and competing. They both had visited Europe before, but this is their first time going, competing, and being a part of that scene. And I think it's such an important introduction for our young riders to see how it works in Europe, see how the shows go, just the overall atmosphere that's there. So to me, it's a terrific experience, and we're looking forward to doing it next year. And for this particular competition, the FEI allowed teams to be made up of two riders. Most countries had sent three with one drop score. That's a little bit different from what most of the senior competitions.
And what we hear often is that the Young Riders that's taking place now this week in the Horse Park is a wonderful preparation for them to be a part of the team, George. Speak a little bit about that, if you would, because obviously you watch these young people come through and begin their international career through these youth programs.
Right, and the NAJYRC, I think, it's a unique competition. It's the first time that most of these riders will do anything not only as an international competition, but also as members of a team. And I think both aspects are crucial to this competition. You know, it's unique in the sense that the FEI has allowed for the U.S. and Canada, these larger, you know, the larger countries, to send regional teams for the U.S., for the USDF regions. Each region can send a team. And for the Canadians, actually, each province could send a team. So it allows, of course, for multiple teams from the two countries. In the past, there have been representatives from Bermuda and from Mexico and from other North American countries. But I think the opportunity to, one, to represent your country internationally is such an honor. And I think it's such a good introduction to both the juniors and the young riders to understand that honor and to really fully appreciate it. And I think the other aspect that is so important is to be a member of the team. You know, dressage in general, we think of it as such an individual sport. But really, as you move forward into the senior ranks, you do end up working, you know, your goal for a lot of riders is to ride either in the Olympics or the World Equestrian Games, where you are a team member, or as we just saw with the Pan Am Games. And, you know, it's so important to learn to be a member of a team and how to work together for one common goal. So I think it's a terrific competition. It's been going now. The young rider aspect has been going now for probably over 30 years. I don't know exactly when it started, but it's been in existence for quite a while. And it's become a true institution.
Well, sure. Let's bring you in now, because, of course, you know all too well the value of being a team member and the contribution that you can make as a team member and that the team gives back to you. Tell us what you've been doing as the USEF youth coach based on the West Coast.
I have done several rider test clinics, and it's a format that I really enjoyed and I think the riders really like. It's a two-day clinic, and the riders will come in. These are riders that have already been competing quite a bit, and they will come in and they'll ride a test, and I will give them my feedback from a judge's point of view, and then we continue for 2 days to work on improving every aspect of the test, and then towards the end of the clinic, they'll ride the test again if they don't have to, but they can. And we just do everything to break down the entire test and improve it as much as we can. And I include the other riders that are not riding at that time to really be involved in the lessons. And I would even ask them for feedback, et cetera, so they learn something from every lesson. And then at the end, we also do video review of each lesson so that the riders themselves can see what everything looked like and compared to how they were feeling. It's very, very intensive, but I think they take a lot away from it, and they also get the judge's view of everything, and that's what I can bring, you know, to the table, along with the trainer's perspective. And I have gotten really good feedback from that, not only from the riders, but also from the trainers, because that's something that they don't necessarily work on as much. So that has been really, really fun. And then George and I have both been going around to some of the bigger CDIs and just try to offer our help there with warm up, sometimes just with the rider, sometimes with the trainer, and the trainer just wants our input on the side. Another thing that I have been doing is I've offered to the riders that they can send me videos of their rides. It doesn't have to be from shows, but it could also be from training. And then I've been on the phone with both the riders and their trainers and just gone through step by step, you know, where things can get better and if they wanted to get even exercises and stuff to help things, or they just want it just straight from a judge's point of view, whatever they want. I just want them to know that I'm here to help them any way possible. And it's also been a way to develop relationships with the riders, and that's been really fun. I really, really, really enjoy working with youth.
George, let me come back to you. With when you go around to CDIs with Charlotte, are you kind of talent spotting? I'm just curious, is how these young people get involved with that program. What is that point of contact that they then find out about the programs, and are they selected, or they, can they just apply? How does that work?
Yeah, it depends on the program. The Charlotte had mentioned the ride a test type format, which fall under our category of what we call outreach clinics, which is, I had mentioned in the very beginning, it's a fairly broad category. And in that, the idea is to reach out depending on the area. And I don't want to say region necessarily because it's not always divided by regions, but parts of the country where we might want to motivate and encourage more interest in dressage. So we have a sort of a grassroots type clinic, one of which I'll be doing in Minnesota in the first part of August. And then on the other end of the spectrum for the outreach clinics is what Charlotte brought up, are these sort of ride-a-test type formats, which Charlotte has really done a super job in, you know, determining the best format and the best way to present it. And as she has mentioned, they've had very good reviews. Those clinics are by application, but there's also more of an invitation aspect to it, or we might encourage riders. So when you mentioned the talent scouting, we are watching at the CDIs and at some of the local shows where there are qualifying classes for the talent. We're always looking for talent. And then if, you know, we encourage them to apply to those clinics. The European Young Rider Tour was slightly different in that riders, again, had to apply, and that was based primarily on their scores from CDIs, CDI-wise specifically. We also are doing what we refer to as high-intensity training sessions, and we have two of those being offered, and those are by invitation, and the invitation are based on scores that have been received in qualifying classes, as well as there is some discretionary room for us if we see somebody who we feel is very talented that we can also include in those clinics. So the talent scouting basically can lead to different things. I think what's important about it is it puts a rider and horse, and sometimes, you know, at this level, we're not always as concerned with the horse. We're looking for talented riders primarily. But what it does is it puts them on the radar screen. We can then watch them and encourage them. And if, you know, they can then move up through the ranks, where Charlotte and I will also recommend them to Debbie McDonald and her coach in her position as a developing coach, if they're moving into the U25 ranks. So I think the main thing is to think about is it gets a rider on the radar screen so that we can then sort of follow their careers and guide them in their careers and try to help them find opportunities for more training.
Charlotte, how often are the clinics that you spoke of?
Well, I've actually only done two of them so far, but I'm really hoping that we'll be able to do more in the future.
And this will be around the country. Obviously, you're based on the West Coast, but you both of you are covering the whole country. So do you strategically place those clinics to give everyone an opportunity to attend?
The two that we've done, one was in Florida and one was in California. And So I'm hoping to see that we can do more around the country, definitely.
And finally, this week, during the NAJYRC, what will your roles specifically be, George, as the USEF youth coaches?
Once again, we're watching and observing and scouting in that sense. We offer our services to anyone, coaching services, anyone that would like help in the warm-up. And that can vary from really a sort of full coaching to just watching and offering a few words of advice and working with one of the rider's coaches. We're certainly not here to step in and interfere in any way with the coaching that they have, their private coaches, but we're really just here to help, you know, where riders and private coaches would like us to help.
So it's very much a team effort, then, a collaboration between the personal coaches and the system that you're trying to grow by recognizing these talent and giving them all the help you can both in competition and through the educational programs?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very important that we work with the coaches, and that the coaches, the private coaches, and they understand that we're really here to assist them and help them. I think because we all have the same goal in the long run.
Well, of course, this week is a wonderful showcase for youth there in the Kentucky Horse Park. I want to thank you both, George Williams and Charlotte Bedore-Baker, the USEF youth coaches, for coming on the program this week. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And we should also mention that the Platinum Performance USDF Junior and Young Rider Clinic Series, where riders are coached by George and Charlotte, as well as Anne Gribbons and Jeremy Steinberg, have now been extended to all 9 regions with the help of Platinum Performance and funding support provided by the Dressage Foundation and the United States Equestrian Federation. And you can find more information on the website at usdf.org and following the link to education and clinics. And now in our education segment, we begin a 3-part series entitled The Circle, which was taken from the 2014 ADEQUAN USDF Annual Convention's education session of the same name and presented by Dr. Hilary Clayton.
Circling is an important part of a lameness examination and also of a pre-purchase exam. And as we go through the talk, I think you're going to see that there are some real concerns for veterinarians concerned with the sort of physiological changes that we see when the horses go on a circle. The horse's spine should conform to the circle line. And the first question that I want to address is whether it's actually possible for that to happen. So the horse's axial skeleton going from the back of the pole all the way through the cervical, the thoracic, lumbar, sacral, and the tail region consists of a large number of individual little bones. And all of those bones are connected very securely by a system of ligaments, muscles, and tendons. And those connections are so secure that if you dissect out a horse's axial skeleton and just leave on the ligaments, tendons, and the very deep muscle layer, it's extremely difficult to flex it, extend it, or bend it. You know, you end up sort of standing on one end and pulling as hard as you can on the other end just to get that spine to actually move. You know, having done that several times, I'm very impressed that horses are able to move their backs as much as they can. It takes a lot of muscle force and power to actually move the horse's back. So having got this system of ligaments, muscles, and tendons connecting the individual vertebrae, then the horse's thoracolumbar spine, and that would be the part of the spine from the base of the neck back to the lumbosacral junction, just sort of behind the lumbar region, that part of the spine acts as if it were a beam. And the beam is supported in front by the horse's front legs and behind by the horse's hind legs. And whenever you have a long beam like that, imagine a beam of wood, it tends to sag in the middle, right? The two ends are supported, the middle part gets a little bit saggy. And in our horses, that effect is emphasized by the fact, first of all, the horse's viscera, all the organs inside the thoracic and abdominal cavities, they weigh probably close to 400 or 500 pounds in an average-sized horse. And those are all the time pulling downwards on the horse's spine. And then we add to that the weight of the rider, and the tendency is for the horse's back to hollow. Now, research has been done looking at the effects on the horse's back when somebody just simply sits on the horse. And just putting the weight of a rider on the horse makes the back a little bit more hollow. And then when the horse goes off and moves, walks, trots, canters, his back has the same range of motion with or without a rider, but when the rider is on the horse, the whole range of motion is shifted to be a little bit more hollow. And one of our goals in riding and training the horses is to strengthen them in a way that they're able to maintain a certain roundness in the back so that we try to avoid that hollowing that naturally occurs when we put the rider's weight on the horse's back. But that's not what I'm going to talk about today. Today, we're talking about the sideways bending of the neck and the back. The neck, as a whole, is a very flexible region, except for the joint between the first and second cervical vertebrae. And that's a joint that's really specialized for tilting motion of the head. But then, as soon as we get into the thoracic region, we have a lot less bending movement in the back through about the 8th, 9th, 10th vertebra. And that's important. That's the region where the front leg is attached. So we wouldn't want a lot of movement there. We need a stable platform for attachment of the forelimb. And then when we get to about T10, going on back through about T16, we've got a much more mobile area. We've got an area of the back that can actually bend quite a bit. And then as we go into the lumbar region, progressively less and less bending. And the most bendy region of the horse's back is between T10 and T16. So that corresponds, that's right underneath the area where we're sitting on the horse. When the horse is at exercise, we wouldn't expect to see as much range of motion. When the horse is actually exercising, we tend to get a lot of motion at the base of the neck, quite a lot at the top of the neck, and not very much anywhere else. I mean, it's possible for the horse to move all of the joints of the neck when he's moving, but generally they use the base of the neck to move the entire head and neck around, up and down, side to side, and then they adjust the pole to change the position of the head. And they want to keep the head position fairly stable because the head takes in a lot of the information about the environment through the eyes and the proprioceptive organs. But very little of that rotational type motion, except at the very top of the neck, in that there is most rotation in that thoracic region between about T10 and T16, and then progressively less and less through the lumbar region. Even though there's only a very small amount of rotation at each of the joints, if you add that up along the whole length of the thoracic and lumbar spine, it can amount to quite a lot of rotation. Now, coming back to the graph that I just showed you, and I showed that the patterns with the amount of lateral bending and the amount of axial rotation, they were quite similar in terms of which areas had the most and the least movement. Well, it turns out that in fact these two types of movement are coupled. When I say coupled, it means that they always occur together. So if the horse bends his back, there will also be some of this axial rotation. And the way the rotation occurs is that if the horse bends to the right, then the top of the spinous process will rotate to the left. So the horse bends to the right, this spinous process rotates outwards to the left. Now, the next thing is that there is some effect of conformation on bending. Regardless of whether a horse has a long back or a short back, he usually has 24 vertebrae. Not always, but usually. So the difference is not, a difference between a horse with a long back and a short back is not in the number of vertebrae, it's in how long the individual vertebrae are. So with the longer vertebrae, even with the same amount of bending at each intervertebral joint, we get more displacement, let's say, of the haunches relative to the shoulders. Whereas in the short-backed horse, we get less displacement. So a short-backed horse can be just as supple as a long-backed horse, but not get as much displacement. The loin region is a critical region for strength and performance. And it also has a big effect on how bendy the horse is. Okay, so having looked at the amount of bending in the horse's back, what we're always brought up to think we're supposed to see, a horse that's perfectly bent on the curve of the circle. Well, they don't usually do that. I don't know if they ever actually do that. What we tend to see is, yeah, we've got a little bit of bending in the thoracic region. We can probably pretty much conform to the circle in that part of the horse's body. The neck is way too bendy, and usually we get a little bit of a break in the angle between the neck and the base of the neck and the thorax. Okay, so very often the neck is too much bent. But then in the lumbar and sacral region, that's pretty inflexible in terms of lateral bending. So usually it tends to be straight a little bit to the outside of the circle, or sometimes to the inside of the circle. But we have to control in front of, if you like, the sacral region, because it's completely inflexible. But the ability to bend the back is, I think, a more critical thing for us to look at. So the muscles that actually participate in bending the back are the back muscles and then the abdominal muscles, specifically the oblique muscles, which run in a sort of crisscross fashion. So let's start with the back muscles. Now, over the years, I've talked about these quite a lot, and I'm sure some of you have heard those talks in the past. But basically, we divide the back muscles into two groups, the long back muscles and the short back muscles. And the words long and short refer to the length of the muscle fascicles. On each side of the spinous process, there are three muscles. There's one muscle that's very close to the spine on each side, and that's the short back muscle. It's the multifidus muscle. And it just has short muscle fibers that connect adjacent vertebrae, or sometimes it crosses two or three or four vertebrae, but that would be the longest this muscle gets. And its job is to actually stabilize the intervertebral joints. It's a postural support muscle. Its job is to turn on before the horse moves any other part of his body, before he moves his back or before he moves his legs, and it then stabilizes the back. So it provides a stable platform for the other muscles of locomotion to work against. Then the long back muscles, it's the one that we see on either side of the spinous process. In a well-developed athletic horse, it'll sometimes kind of bulge up at the sides of the spinous process. Okay, that's longissimus. That's the one we tend to think of as the back muscle. But then there's also iliocostalis, and it's bulging out further to the side of longissimus. These long back muscles, they extend the entire length of the thoracic and lumbar region, and they are much better configured to be able to bend the back. Okay, so we've got two systems of muscles. We've got the short multifidus muscle, which is stabilizing the joints, and then the long back muscles that are actually going to move and bend the back. Remember that these are not the muscles that round the back. Okay. That's the job of the muscles on the underside of the vertebrae. If the long back muscles contract on both sides, the left and right muscles together, then it's actually going to extend the intervertebral joints and hollow the horse's back. So these back muscles can hollow the back, or if they only work on one side at a time, then they can bend the back. So if the muscles on the left side contract, then the horse bends to the left. The muscles on the right side contract, the horse bends to the right. But just bending the vertebrae isn't enough. We've got this huge rib cage and abdominal region full of the horse's viscera. We need to be able to control that area as well when the horse is bending. And that's mainly the job of the oblique abdominal muscles. So the abdominal muscles on each side of the body, there are four muscles. There's one, the deepest one, it kind of goes round the belly like almost like a bandage. But the muscles that we're really interested in for bending, they're called oblique muscles because they run at a sort of oblique angle to the long axis of the horse's body. The outermost one is the external oblique, just external because it's outside the internal oblique, and it goes at an angle from the ribs, detaches along the ribs, and it runs downwards and backwards to the midline of the body. The internal oblique is coming from the pelvic region, and it's running downwards and forwards to the midline of the body. So we've got these two muscle systems kind of crossing over each other and running in different directions. And when those two muscles contract together on one side, then it helps to bend the horse's entire body. The same effect as if you do a little lateral crunch, you would use these oblique muscles. So what would be some exercises that we could use to strengthen the bending muscles? Well, obviously exercises that bend the horse's body. So circles, spirals are great, and any of the lateral movements that involve a bend in the horse's body. So, you know, the classical things that we do in our training are not only effective for teaching the horse the technical skills and improving his performance, but they're also, at the same time, when we do them in a progressive fashion, then they're going to progressively strengthen the horse. And this is one of the reasons why we can't take shortcuts in training. Right? We shouldn't be doing small circles before the horse has mastered the large circle and developed the necessary strength to do a smaller circle correctly.
And we'll be continuing with this three-part series next week. And Dr. Clayton will be joining us again for this year's Adequan USDF Annual Convention, which takes place at the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino from December the 2nd through the 5th in Las Vegas. And you can find more information about the convention, including the agenda and education sessions, by going to the website at usdf.org, where you can register for the convention. And whilst you're on the website, be sure to check out all the latest education resources on eTrack, where you'll find materials relating to the topics we cover here on the podcast. If you prefer to listen to this podcast on the go, you can download it from iTunes to any smartphone or tablet app such as Podbean or Stitcher. I'll be back with more next week, but for now, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.